Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode has been sponsored by Generation UCAN. More about our sponsor later on in the show. You're listening to episode 204 of the Marathon Running Podcast. In this episode, you're going to learn about running and track etiquette. This is the Marathon Running Podcast by Letty and Ryan from We Got the Runs. Join us in our running community for weekly content that is motivational, educational, and inspirational, and let the Marathon Running Podcast take you from the starting line to the finish line and beyond. Hey runners, and welcome to episode 204. My name is Letty. I am flying solo today. Usually I'm joined by my co-host Ryan, but today it's just me, and today I'm also running. Let me explain. On the day this airs, it's April 15th, 2024, and it is the day of the Boston Marathon. My podcasts come out every Monday at 5 a.m. So literally by the time this airs, if you are one of the early listeners, I'm probably just waking up to get ready to run the Boston Marathon, put on all the gear, and walk down to the Commons to then hop on the bus and then go to Hopkinton to start this amazing race at, I think, 10:30. So wish me luck. And if you guys ran the Boston Marathon, congratulations to you. I hope it went exactly how you wanted it to be. And if not, there's always another one, right? There's always a next marathon. But now we're pretty much getting to the conclusion of the spring marathons. There's London, right? But there's not that many people that run the doubles. And then after that, it's summertime. In the summertime, a lot of people focus more on speed, and that's going to be including me. And because of that, we thought it would be a great topic to talk about running etiquette, specifically when it comes to the track. If you didn't really run track in college or high school, just like me, I didn't run back then going to the track as a grown-up can be a little bit intimidating. There's a ton of runners out there, and all of them seem to know what they're doing. At the same time, running on a track seems so simple, right? You just run in a circle. But there's a lot of different things that come into play when it comes to that, including which direction to run and so much more. So much more that I was actually caught off guard quite a couple of times when I was talking to our guest today, Chris Knighton, who was a track coach and marathon coach, who I invited on to talk about the track and all these little intricacies that are very interesting. So this is a good episode to tune in, and maybe it'll also raise your appetite for gaining a little speed, because as we know, gaining speed in the summer translates into faster 5Ks, faster shorter races, and then eventually we'll learn how to maintain that pace when we go the longer distances and run marathons. So that's my spiel. That's why it's important to listen to this episode. And that's for the intro this week. It's just me, and I'm still struggling with bronchitis, so I am pausing this episode every time I have a coughing attack. And with that, I'm just going to introduce our guest, Chris Knighton, and we'll hear about track running and running etiquette. All right, so I am back on with Chris Knighton. Chris, thank you so much for joining us again.
Hey, Letty, thanks for having me back on. I'm always so excited to come onto your show.
Yes, and we were just talking about how this is kind of a different topic, and it's a kind of a fun topic, right? And hopefully with you, we are in good hands, being a track coach and, you know, for high school and all that stuff about running etiquette. But before we hop into track, let's start with just running in general, you know, the do's and don'ts of all types of running environments. Maybe that's a good starting point.
Yeah, let's get into it. This is going to be a fun conversation. This stuff is, it's important, and it feels kind of cool once you learn this kind of stuff, but no one really teaches you it, you know, so hopefully we will here today. So yeah, general running etiquette out on the road. This one's interesting. I think it largely is going to depend on where you live and like how many runners are in your environment. You know, I used to live in Boston, Massachusetts, and there was runners everywhere. Like I'd go out for a run and I'd see any time of day, I would see over a dozen different runners. Now where I live in Providence, there are parts of the city I can run to and I'll see runners, but by and large, most of the runs I go out, I literally see nobody. So when I do see somebody nowadays, it's actually kind of cool. I try to wave to them. I say hi when I pass by. It's kind of a rare sight. And where I live, there's honestly so few runners in most parts of the city that I'm starting to learn like who it is. You know, I'll see people and recognize them. So that's kind of cool. So I try to be friendly and say hi when I pass folks. Back when I lived in Boston, you know, there was way more runners about. And I was still trying to be nice and friendly, but sometimes, you know, you just kind of get the fatigue. You're not necessarily going to say hi to like 100 different people if you're running on the Boston Marathon course on a Sunday training run or something like that. But try to be friendly, try to not get up in people's space. Training is very different than the etiquette of racing. In training, you want to try to give people their space. You don't want to try to just catch up to someone and race with someone or pass someone, you know, just because they're out there on a run and you see them. That happens a lot. It's kind of funny when you're on a bike path and someone catches up to you and blows past you, but then you catch up to them in a little bit because you're just going a steady pace and that they faded a bit. I don't know. In general, you just kind of want to be a friendly person out there when you see somebody. You know, so many folks nowadays run with headphones and stuff like that too, so you don't even know if they could hear you necessarily. But whether I'm on the road or the track, I always try to acknowledge my fellow runners and just say hey, because you know they're out there doing the same thing that you're doing. And you know, though we live in this running world and it's a big part of our lives and we're listening to running podcasts, by and large most people don't do this kind of thing and don't understand it. So when you do see somebody else who's a runner, you know, you have a shared experience with them, and that's kind of cool.
Yes, I love the subtle head nod and acknowledgement of yep, we're out here together no matter how hot it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with that, okay, so we talked a little bit about how, or you mentioned how it's different to behave while you're training, obviously, versus the marathon. There's so much running mm-hmm. etiquette when it comes to marathoning. So let's go a little bit specifically here. Let's go a little bit more specific with this one.
Mm-hmm.
What are the expectations regarding stops, like water stops, or how can runners ensure they don't really impede on others while they are hydrating?
Yeah. So training and racing, yeah, very different etiquette. Keep in mind that racing is a competition and people view it as that, you know, people are trying to get the most out of themselves. They're also trying to run better than the other people in the race generally. And when it comes to water stops and marathons, this is a big one. The way you want to approach water stops is you want to run through them. The biggest pet peeve that I have with water stops is when someone just stops dead in their tracks or slows way down to grab a water. You want to get comfortable, and this is something that you should practice in like your tune-up races before your marathon. You want to get comfortable running through the water stops, maintaining a steady speed, grabbing the water, and then drinking on the run. The worst thing that can happen, and this has happened to me, and I'm sure it's happened to so many of the listeners, is you're running behind somebody in a marathon, in a fairly crowded marathon, and then that person literally just stops dead in their tracks to grab a water, and you're a foot or two behind them, and you practically swam into them, or you have to like jump out of the way because they stopped dead in their tracks, and you were expecting them to keep running through the water stop. That's the biggest one with the water stops, for sure.
Or when somebody suddenly speeds up and comes out of nowhere and cuts in front of you and grabs the water, that you were kind of aiming for. I find that one personally very annoying.
Yeah, I think it's really good etiquette if you're in a marathon. If you intend to go to the water stop as you're approaching it, you know, point out to the right or to the left with your arm and kind of indicate like a turn signal in a car, just kind of point out, indicating to those behind you that you're going to go to it. And then it's not a surprise. You know, if you expect to go to the water stations too, you can generally be on the right side of the road or the left side of the road throughout the course of the marathon. And that way you're not abruptly cutting in and cutting people off to get to the water stop. You know, you should have a general idea of where the water stations are. In major marathons, they're like every mile roughly. So, you know, you can be on that side of the road. You don't need to just veer off, cut anybody off. Really try not to impede anyone as you go through them. That's the main thing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Be courteous of your fellow runners. And what are your thoughts on obstacles? And obviously we're running a marathon here. I want to do an obstacle course, but if you see something on a road, I've been in running clubs before where it was taught that you see something on the road, you kind of raise your arm just to kind of alert the person behind you. Hey, there's a cone that nobody else saw because there's so many people running, things of that nature. Can you think of any more?
Yeah, for sure. So before I got into running, I was big into cycling. And, you know, when you see a group of people biking together, you generally form what's called like a pace line or a peloton, where you ride pretty closely together. It helps the people in the back draft off of the people in the front. And you can all move quicker that way. And when we run in marathons in tight groups, we're basically doing the same thing. You often can't see what's directly ahead of you because there's runners blocking the way. So if you're doing this in a marathon or any other road race, or just in a group run, it's really important for the people in front to call out any kind of hazards in the road. I learned this from cycling, and this is really good etiquette to do in running as well. So, you know, if there's, like you were saying, like a cone in the road or a big pothole, or if it's the winter and there's ice, you know, what I like to do is point down, like on the side of the road that it is. So if it's on the right or the left, kind of point down to where it is and just say, you know, ice or pothole or cone, something like that, before you come up to it. Another thing that you can do, this is also kind of from the cycling world, is if you are in the front of other runners, they're following you and you're trying to avoid an obstacle, you can point in the direction that you are going to go to avoid it. So say you're going to go left, you can kind of point to the left, then run a little bit to the left, avoid the thing. That lets people know that you're going to turn and hopefully be avoiding something. You know, if you point to the left and say pothole, and then you go to the left, they'll understand that that's what you're trying to do. Those are just general niceties to do so that everyone stays safe and no one trips in a race.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm glad that you kind of brought up the subject of drafting, because I know with biking, the drafting works really, really well. If you are a fast runner, I'm assuming that also works, but for, you know, middle of the packers, I mean, I guess, or, you know, fast runners, how much drafting, how much following the lead person or the fast person in your section is too much? How much personal space do they need? I've never been the faster runners, but I've ran pretty close up to other runners. And I can see how if you do that too long, maybe that could be annoying, that, you know, you're constantly using somebody else's windbreaker. What's a good etiquette for that one?
Yeah. So drafting makes a big difference in running, you know, especially the faster you're going, but really no matter what pace you're going, it makes a big difference. It makes a big mental difference as well as a physical difference. You know, one reason why races often have pacers for the people in the front who are hopefully going to win the race, or if, you know, if it's a time trial and a track race and they're trying to run a certain time, the reason why they have pacers is because when you're just following somebody and you're letting them set the pace, you can kind of turn your mind off and just run with it. And I guess in marathons, we often do have pacers. We have pace group leaders. So maybe you're trying to break 3 or 3:30, run a BQ. Maybe you're trying to break 4 for the first time, something like that. We have pace group leaders. And if you just follow them, you don't need to worry about the pace. You can just trust that they're doing it. And when you kind of let go of that mental energy of figuring out the pace and worrying about it and just turn your mind off, you can actually run a lot faster. And that's really helpful mentally. Physically, it's also really helpful to just be in a pack behind other people. You know, for anyone who saw the 159 challenge with Eliud Kipchoge, one of the main reasons why he was able to run under 2 hours in that fabricated marathon is because he had a huge group of windbreakers, of people to draft behind, who rotated in and out, who he ran directly behind throughout that whole race. And he was never able to break two without them, but with them, it made a huge difference. How close is too close? That's a bit of a subject for debate, I think, for sure. You know, if you're in a very competitive race, I don't think there is such a thing as too close. I mean, when I'm in a marathon or a track race or a 5K and I'm trying to run a PR, I just get right up on someone as close as I can. And I'm fine with that. And, you know, I like to think that people, I like to think that, you know, it is a race. It's part of the tactics of running. And, you know, we can take turns sharing the lead for sure. Like, I think in a marathon, you're not just going to want to draft someone for the whole 26 miles. You should take turns with who takes the lead. Maybe in a marathon, if you're in a pace group and say there's five of you who are all running about the same pace, you should run pretty tightly together, but you could take turns. Maybe somebody takes the lead for a mile and then you switch back. Somebody else takes the lead for a mile, then you switch back. This is very common in the cycling world. When you're in a pace line, it takes more effort to run in the front. So someone will pull the pace group along from the front for a certain amount of time, and then they'll fall back and they'll go to the back. And then the second place person will pull the pace group for a while, and then they'll fall back, and you kind of rotate through like that. You can do this in a running race as well. And if you're in a marathon and you're kind of chatting with the people you're running with, this is a good approach to do. You know, if you're in a more competitive situation, like say you are in a 5K and you're racing head to head with somebody and you really want to beat them, it's okay to sit on them and draft off of them and then, you know, try to make a move at the end. Those are sort of just the tactics of racing. Are you up in their personal space? Yes, maybe. And will you annoy them? Yes, maybe. But I guess you sort of need to think, you know, when you're in this race with someone, are you trying to like be their friend, or are you trying to be competitive against them? Those are kind of two different things. And they both have their place in different races, but be courteous, but also, you know, what are you there to do on the day, I guess is a question.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I guess, you know, some of us never had to think about that, but, you know, now that we're bringing it up, it's interesting. I remember in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, I remember seeing Eliud Kipchoge, and Galen Rupp was kind of right at him. Mm-hmm. And he said something to him and it didn't look pleasant. I never looked up what it was, but I felt like it was because maybe he was doing it too much. And then the other instance, I just recently, you know, watching the US trials, seeing Dakota Lindworm in the press conference afterwards, she said that she almost accidentally got herself in the first spot as the lead for a while, and she couldn't wait to get out of that spot. So it's like, you know, things we never think about, but I guess it makes sense. It's very fatiguing if you are in the front and then having others take over, slowing the pace down and all that. It's a whole different animal.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is one reason that I really enjoy more competitive races. So like this winter, I've been focusing on racing track. I live up near Boston. There's a lot of indoor track races here, and I coach indoor track in the winter for my high school athletes. And it's fun. It's really competitive. Every race is really a competition against the other runners. And that often feels very different in how you how you approach the event and the tactics you employ versus most road races. Most road races, not all, but certainly most of them, you maybe feel like you're running more with others than against them. In some road races, you'll feel like you're running against others, but in many, you feel like you're running with them. And that dynamic certainly does affect the tactics and the etiquette a little bit. You know, recreational road running often is, it can be competitive, but often it's like, hey, let's all try to do our best and let's work together to push the pace. I think marathons are often like that. Almost always like that. You know, marathons, you're working together with your fellow runners to all run the best time that you can. Whereas something like a track race or maybe a 5K, if you're trying to be competitive in that, yes, maybe you're working together to all run the best time, but at the end, you know, you want to finish as well as you can and beat your competitors. So it really can be different depending on the environment you're in and your level of competitiveness. I'll leave it at that.
No, but that's good because you're kind of bringing us to the big question, because the track is a whole new element for a lot of us. A lot of us, you know, we do our fartleks on the roads and stuff like that. And then we finally get access to a track. And usually it's in the afternoons when there's a lot of high schoolers and other things going on, but we're allowed to use it. So let's talk about the track in general, right? So there's the 400 meter track, so that's 400 meters, that's a quarter mile approximately, and there's eight lanes. And obviously, as the lanes get further towards the outside, it's not 400 meters anymore, right? How much additional meters are there for each lane?
So most outdoor running tracks are 400 meters in length. And whenever you're doing a running workout, you do want to be in lane one. You really shouldn't be running a workout in an outer lane. And like I was saying earlier, if you're there doing a workout, you deserve to be in lane one and you should take that space. So lane one is exactly 400 meters. Every additional lane you move out adds 7 to 8 meters per lap. So if you run in lane two, that's about 408 meters. If you run in lane three, it's about 415 meters. And if you're all the way out in like lane six, that's 438 meters. Lane eight, if it's an eight-lane track, 484 meters. So it's a big difference. I mean, if you were doing, let's say you're doing mile repeats. So a mile is four laps of the track plus 9 meters, but let's just say four laps. That four laps is 1600 meters in lane one. Four laps in lane eight, if you were in lane eight the whole time, is over 1800 meters. So it's like an extra 200 meters. So it's a huge, huge difference. And I actually, surprisingly, I see a lot of runners do this. They'll go and do a workout and they'll run on the track and they won't run in lane one. it often kind of, I'm like, why'd you do that? But then I realized that if no one really ever taught you how to run properly on track, maybe you don't know. So when you run on a track, you should, first of all, realize that your GPS watch is not going to be that accurate on the track. Whenever you're running in circles, your GPS watch is not very accurate. So if you try to run a mile on a track, it's four laps, very likely your GPS is going to beep and say you ran a mile at a different time than when you actually completed that mile. So when you run on the track, you should know the distances of the laps. Four laps is a mile. Two laps is half a mile. One lap is a quarter mile when you're in lane one. And you should perform your workout to the actual real distance on the track, not what your GPS watch says. And if you're doing something like running in an outside lane, let's say you're running in lane 4, trying to do mile repeats, it's very unlikely that what your GPS watch says is a mile is what you actually ran. And it's also not going to be 4 laps either. So yeah, run in lane 1 when you're doing workouts is the short answer to this.
Okay, perfect.
At this time, we want to thank our sponsor, UCAN. Are you tired of a spike and crash and GI distress that comes with the sugar-based sports nutrition? It's time to give UCAN a try. UCAN uses steady-release carbs instead of sugars, so you don't feel the highs and the lows in energy. UCAN powders, gels, and bars are powered by Life Steady, a patent starch-based carbohydrate that was originally developed as a medical food to help children maintain stable blood sugar throughout the night. It's backed by science and truly unique in energy source. Clinically proven to help blood sugar stable during exercise, LiveSteady supports sustained performance and optimal energy levels. I've tried UCAN now for the past couple of months and I've been happy with my long runs and how I feel. Also, they don't taste bad, and after mile 15, I can still stomach them. Top marathon runners in the US, including Emily Sisson, Sarah Hall, Emma Bates, and Chiara D'Amato, all use UCAN for fuelings. So why shouldn't you give them a try? Especially because Marathon Running podcast listeners have a chance to try 4 gels for free. All you pay for is the cost of shipping. So head over to ucan.co/MRP, which, by the way, stands for Marathon Running Podcast, to claim this offer and get your free samples. If you are already using UCAN and you want that 20% discount, you can just go to ucan.co and save those 20% with code MRP. We're also having all this linked in our show notes. And now back to the show. And then yet another question in regards to lanes. You know, when we watch track and field or whatever on television, there are some races where people have their designated lanes that obviously, you know, they're kind of cut with an angle. So that way they all run the same distance. But which races are the ones where people are supposed to stay in their own lanes versus not?
Yeah, it's a good question. So generally the sprint races, people stay in their lanes, whereas for distance races, there is what's called a waterfall start generally, or sometimes what's known as a barrel start, where the athletes pretty much can cut in and go to lane 1, essentially at the very beginning of the race. Distance races in track and field are defined as over 800 meters. Sprint races are under 800 meters. The 800 meter race is kind of a hybrid between distance and sprint. Both athletes can do it. Some people who run 800 meters are distance runners. Some people who run 800 meters more sprint runners. The 800 meter typically, at least at the professional level, starts in lanes, but then the athletes do cut in after a certain amount of time. They go to lane 1. But sometimes at the high school level, the 800 is often run from a waterfall start. So it's run like a distance race, meaning that everyone can cut in immediately. The reason why they do this is because when you're sprinting, you're starting the race extremely fast, and you want to have some space and separation between the athletes so that you don't impede each other. In a distance race, the paces are relatively slower from the get-go of the race, and impeding each other in a distance race is actually kind of part of the tactics of a race. you can impede someone in a acceptable way, in a rule acceptable way, that can be part of the strategy of a race. So this is kind of why they do a waterfall start, and you're not so concerned about bumping into each other and stuff like that as you would be with a sprint race. But in a sprint race, no athletes are supposed to make contact with each other. You're not supposed to impede each other. And that's why people have their own lanes. So they can just focus on their own race and run as fast as possible without interference from other athletes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for clarifying that for us. Maybe, should we start at lane usage? Can we talk about what's the lane etiquette here?
Yeah. So track etiquette, I think, is one of the most important points of this conversation. I love running on the track. I work out on them most weeks and hope those listening can find one to work out on one as well. It's really fun. So lane etiquette. Yeah. This is something that people commonly, I think, get wrong just because no one really teaches them, you know? So hopefully we can teach you here. So lane etiquette, generally lane one is reserved for the person who's running fastest on the track at that moment. So anyone who's going to a track and doing a speed workout of some kind, they can use lane one. If you are currently jogging at the track, or you're in, let's say, a recovery section of your workout, maybe you're doing intervals, right? You do a fast interval. You should be in lane one during that. No matter if you think of yourself as a fast runner or a slow runner, if you're doing an interval workout, you can be in lane one and you should be in lane one. But then let's say you have a recovery jog to do, like run one lap fast and then jog one lap, you should move to an outer lane if there's others at the track when you're doing that jog. So, you know, you may be at a track and there's, let's say, five different people doing workouts at a time. When you're running fast, be in lane one. But if you're doing a recovery jog, move out to an outer lane and give priority to lane one for the people who are currently running fast.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So, well, first let's talk about the direction of the track, right? Let's talk about clockwise versus counterclock. Yep. I know I've done that wrong and it's been so long that I have gotten access to a track. I don't really remember, but I had to learn that when you do warm up and you cool down, you go a different direction than when you're actually doing your workout. So maybe tell us about that to start with.
Yeah, so the way that you run on a track is counterclockwise. You're always taking left-hand turns when you're doing your workout, when you're running fast. When you're in lane one, like I was saying, you want to be taking left-hand turns. You're going counterclockwise. And that's just the way it is, right? However, if you're warming up or cooling down on the track, it is helpful to run the other direction around just to kind of balance out how many left turns you're making. So it's acceptable and you can jog clockwise, so taking right turns in the outer lanes. So the fastest people there, you know, they're doing their workout, they're in the inside lane, lane one, lane two, doing left-hand turns counterclockwise. But if you are warming up or cooling down, you can be in the outside lanes doing clockwise. So slow running the other way around, just staying out of the way of the people who are running fast on the inner lanes. And it's good to do running in both directions like that, because, you know, if you're at a track and you're doing, you know, something like longer, like mile repeats, or even, you know, just 400s, you're taking a lot of left-hand turns, and you'll notice how that feels on your body. You'll notice some imbalances. But if you warm up and cool down by taking right-hand turns, it kind of helps balance that out a little bit. So it's a good thing to do.
Perfect. Thank you for explaining that. And a follow-up question with that one was, when I was in Germany last summer, a lot of the athletes, instead of doing their warm-ups and cool-downs on the actual track, they mm-hmm. were doing that. I think it was just a cool down. They were doing the cool downs on the grass. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's great. And actually, it's probably better to do it that way. You'll see a lot of college and high school athletes do it that way. And that's because they know that running on softer surfaces is a really good thing to do. And most of us don't get the opportunity to run on softer surfaces enough. So the inner of a track is usually grass or astroturf, and it's a little bit softer than the track surface itself. So doing your warm up and cool down there, it's going to be good for you. Running on softer surfaces, it's gentler on your body. You don't take as much impact from running on pavement or a firm track, and you can actually run more, and it helps it actually does help build you stronger when you run on softer surfaces because they tend to be a little more uneven. So as runners, we should always be looking for opportunities to run on things like dirt roads, smooth trails, sports fields, you know, grass, cross-country courses or golf courses if you're able to run on one. But, you know, most of us tend to run on pavement and concrete and stuff like that just because of the nature of where we live. But if you ever have opportunity to run on grass, you should take it. So it's a good thing to do.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. All right, so more about lanes. When we meet our local running clubs and they happen to do a workout on the track, then ideally we would run and the faster person would pass on the inside, correct?
Whenever you're on... So yeah, this is a good question. So if you go to a track and there's multiple people doing workouts at the same time, right? So maybe you're with a club and there's 10 or 20 different people doing the same workout, or you go and there's just people doing different workouts, individuals or different clubs. Yeah. How do you pass? How do you handle the different paces, right? When you're just at a track, just working out, and you're not in a race environment, this isn't a race, this would be just working out casually, you know, regular training, you always want to pass people on the right. You want to pass on the outside. So you want to go wide to pass them. So if a slower runner is in lane one and blocking lane one, you want to pass them on the right. You know, if someone's in lane two, then that's fine because you can just be in lane one and pass them. But if someone is blocking your lane, you always want to move to the right to pass them. You don't want to pass on the inside.
So for group setting, if you're at the track with 20 or so people, not a race setting, everyone doing the same workout, then you're passing on the outside. But as a person attending one of these group workouts, you know your speed and you kind of know who these other people are. Should you stay away from lane one, knowing that the faster people would then have to pass you on the right side?
No, I don't think so. I think everyone who's doing a workout deserves to run in lane one. You know, even if you think of yourself as, oh, I'm slower than these other people, that's fine. I think you still deserve to run in lane one. The faster people can pass you, and that's fine. I think it's completely fine to say, hey, I'm here doing a workout just like you are. I'm going to claim my space in lane one. You can pass me. And that's fine. You should never think, you never want to think, oh, I'm not good enough to run in lane one. I'm not fast enough to run in lane one. Anyone who's doing a workout can run in lane one. That's fine. That said, I mean, if you're just jogging, if you're just running easy, if you're in a recovery break or you're just doing a standing rest or whatever, you don't want to stand in lane one or jog in lane one. You want to move out so faster people can go. But if you're in the middle of an interval or a tempo segment, you deserve to be in lane one no matter what your pace is.
Okay. And I'm asking this because, you know, way back when I was running on the track and I would be doing group workouts, I know there were people obviously faster speeding up behind me and yelling track instead of passing me on the right side, and I would go into the left lane so they could pass me. When is it acceptable to be the runner that yells track and expecting another runner to move out for you?
You said you would move to the left lane. Did you mean move to the right lane?
Yes, I'm sorry. I would move to an outer lane.
Yeah. And you'd be in the middle of a workout at this point and someone would come up behind you and yell track.
Yes. And it happened a lot.
Okay. So you'd be running fast during this.
Fast.
And they would be just faster.
They would just be faster. Fast for my circumstances, they'd be faster.
Okay. I would say that person is being rude and displaying bad etiquette. And you deserve to be in lane one and they can pass you. If you were just walking in lane one or slowly jogging or standing in lane one, blocking it in some way, then you would be the one being rude or showing bad etiquette. But if you're running fast and they're running fast and they just happen to be running faster, they they need to move out and pass you. And I think that that's totally, they should expect that. And that's, they should not, just because they're faster than you, it's, if they're faster than you, it's their responsibility to pass you, not your responsibility to get out of the way.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for clarifying that. So then in what instance would it be acceptable for somebody to yell track? Is it just if somebody's blocking the lane without wanting to? Like, you know, if there's a game going on, like a soccer game going on, and there's people watching those high school games, is that one of those
instances? Yes. So two instances where this would, there's two instances where somebody would want to move out of the way of a faster runner. The first one would be if this wasn't, you were in an actual race, you know, if you're an actual, if you're in an actual race and you were in the back and literally getting lapped by a leader. If, and you, sometimes you see this, if you watch something like a 5K or 10K on the track, you see this, you know, in the professional races, indoor tracks, this happens a lot because indoor tracks are pretty short, only like 200 meters. If a leader is passing you, literally lapping you, then, you know, you're kind of out of contention for winning that race, right? So you should move out of the way so that the leader can pass you, if you know that they're coming. However, you know, in a workout situation, it's very different. You know, workouts are casual. It's not a race. Like, it's a very different situation. So, so that would be one example. Is if you were in a race, a track race, and you were getting lapped, you shouldn't impede the people who are winning the race. You should move out of their way. If you happen to be at a track and it's crowded, and, you know, there's, like you said, spectators watching a soccer game on the infield, and you are allowed to be running on the track at that time, and they're just standing in lane one blocking it, you know, you can ask them to move out of the way. That's fine. Often track and field facilities, there is a lot going on. Maybe you're at, you know, often they're held at high schools or schools. There could be a practice going on. You know, I would do workouts and there's like a football practice going on in the field in the middle and I'm doing my workout. As long as like I'm allowed to be there and I'm not impeding on their practice in some way, I think it's fine to ask people to move out of the lane one. Sometimes I've been to a track and literally parents have like their kids and their kids are just playing in lane one or like playing in the sand pit of the long jump and like, which is often near lane one, and they're kind of in it, or they're just like standing looking at their phone or something in lane one. I mean, I think in this case, it's fine to ask them to get out of the way. If someone's just walking, oftentimes walkers go to the track and walk laps. Those people should be in the outer lanes if there's faster runners there. Runners should always have priority over walkers. I tend to just avoid confrontation. So usually rather than asking someone to move, I'll just, you know, I'll move and avoid them because I don't really want to get into it with them. But if you're someone who doesn't mind telling someone to get out of the way, I think in a situation like that, you could ask them, and, you know, they should respect the fact that you're there to work out. You have priority over that space. And if they're just, you know, occupying it, then they should move. But I usually just avoid the situation and run around them.
Yeah, that makes more sense. We just wanted to know what's the appropriate manner of doing those things. So besides the information that you were able to provide us with for track usage, what are some other things that you specifically would like for our listeners to learn about so they have the proper track etiquette?
So one thing I would say, like, be aware of who's on the track when you're at the track. So when you show up to go do your workout, you know, look around, see, to get a sense of like, are there other runners there? Are they doing a workout? Are people walking on the track? Are you there by yourself? You know, when you're there by yourself, you can kind of do whatever you want. Take advantage of the space. You know, I was saying earlier that you should always do fast workouts in a counterclockwise direction, because that's the way traffic flows on a track. But if you're the only one there, or you're the only one running, you can do your workout in the clockwise direction, and it's good to do so. So I live near a high school, and I often run there in the middle of the day. 9 times out of 10 that I go there, I'm the only runner there. So when I'm the only runner there, I kind of do whatever I want. You know, say I'm doing something like 8x400 meters, I'll do 4 laps in one direction, and then I'll do 4 laps in the other direction, just because it's good to not take so many left-hand turns. It's good to balance it out, you know, the directions you're running. But if it was a crowded track and there was 20 people there, I wouldn't do that. I would follow the normal etiquette flow of taking left-hand turns, and I would only go clockwise if I was warming up or cooling down, and I would do that in the other lanes. You know, another thing is, like, if it is a crowded track and there are people walking on the track and you're running really fast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know, it's probably nice not to give people some space if you can. Like, you know, even if somebody is like walking in lane one, and, you know, yeah, they probably shouldn't be walking in lane one, and you're doing a workout or whatever. Maybe don't just like blow right past them and buzz past them with like 2 inches to spare. Give them a little space as you pass them. You know, just try to be a nice person and share all the space that there is there, is good. If you're doing like warm up and cool down activities. So I was saying earlier, if you're warming up, you want to be on the outside of the track. You can jog laps in either direction. That's fine. Generally, before a track workout, you're also going to want to do some additional exercises to help warm you up. So some stretching, some form drills, perhaps. That's usually what I'll do, and maybe some strides. And you can do those in the outside lane as well. I know when I'm doing form drills, it's a lot of just like awkward movements and standing around and stuff. So just try to stay out of the way of other runners when you're doing that stuff. And yeah, I guess that's kind of it. It's really pretty simple once you get the hang of it. And then you'll feel a lot more confident once you kind of understand like the rules of the road, so to speak.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, last but not least, what are your thoughts on headphones? Is it kind of like what you were just saying, that, you know, obviously if you're the only one on the track, who cares? But what's the etiquette on headphones when you do share the space? Is it more aggressively prohibitive than road running, or?
That's a good question. I would say if you're on a busy track, I would say it's probably best if you're not wearing headphones. I know when I coach track and field, I go to a lot of busy track meets, races where there's a ton of kids, high schoolers, and a lot of events going on, a lot of people there, you know, people running on the track, people on the infield, officials, spectators, all this stuff. Most of those races, they actually don't allow the kids to wear headphones at all, because you don't want to be, if you're actually on a really busy track, it's kind of like organized chaos. Like everyone, people don't bump into each other because everyone's paying attention and being careful. It's kind of like driving during rush hour. Like it's kind of crazy. There's tons of moving parts and kind of dangerous, but you know, by and large, people get home safely. Occasionally there's an accident, but often the accidents are because someone wasn't paying attention or, you know, was distracted or something like that. And it's sort of the same way on a track. You know, when you go to a track and it's busy, you want to be aware of your surroundings. I would say don't wear headphones. And yeah, be aware of what's around you. You know, if there are faster runners passing you and that sort of stuff, like be aware of that, you know, you can hear them coming up, right? If you're not wearing headphones, but if you are wearing them, you maybe don't hear them. So I think that would be good etiquette for sure. Just for safety. And, you know, if anyone is trying to speak to you while you're on the track too, like you are sharing that space together. So it's probably nice to be able to hear what they're saying.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So yeah, perfect. Thank you, Chris, for these answers to my many questions. And if our listeners want to learn more about you and your coaching and get involved, how can they best contact you?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Letty. So everything that I do can be found on my website, nightandruns.com. One of the best ways to get connected with the content I create and learn more about my methods is downloading a free edition of my book. If you go to nightandruns.com/book, you can get a copy of Run Faster Marathons, The Proven Path to PR, which is my training guide. And would it be okay if I plugged my track running program here again?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So for those who are interested in doing more running on a track and getting faster in this realm of running, I have a new training program called Run Your Fastest Mile. And this is something that's been really popular with marathon runners. I think distance runners don't focus on training their speed enough, and they have a lot of opportunity to grow there. So I have a new program that will help you run your fastest mile in 5 weeks. And if you want to check that out, you can just go to my website, nightandruns.com, go to the training plan section. And I have a special discount code for marathon running podcast listeners. If you use the code podcast, you can save 50% on that program. And I'll say that in all honesty, over 90% of the marathoners who followed this program have run a new mile PR after completing it. So it's pretty cool to see.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'm going to jump on that train as well in the summer once all these spring marathons are over. And, you know, once we leave those behind, I'd love to see how that works, because I've had you on before and we talked about how, you know, becoming faster and shorter distances can be so helpful, and that'll carry over to the marathons. So I'll be looking for that one as well in the summer.
Yeah, thanks. I'm actually finishing up a season of my own personal track racing right now. And this Sunday, I'm racing a mile, hoping to run my fastest. So I'm going to use all of these concepts of track etiquette and maybe a little bit of competitiveness on the track to draft around people and pass them at the best time possible to try to run my fastest time. And I might be doing a 5K on the track and the week after that, and then one more mile. So hopefully I'll have some good times by the next time we chat, Letty.
I'm sure you will. You've been doing awesome. So thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate this.
Thanks. Anytime.
Thank you, Chris, for coming and talking to me. I, like I said, learned a lot from this episode, and hopefully you did too. Let me know in the comments. You can message me on Instagram or reach out. We've also lately been playing with YouTube videos and have a YouTube channel. I'm not posting all the podcast episodes on there. That's ultimately the goal, but time-wise, I'm not sure if I'm going to get around to doing that. It's complicated. I have so much to learn. For example, when I edit my podcast now, I can do it on high speed, but I don't know how to edit videos on high speed. So it would take a lot longer because I share the same audio, but not going to bore you with that. Stay tuned for next week. Next week, we will have the Boston 2024 recap video, and I'm going to put my foot in my mouth, but I'm going to do a prediction. I predict that Evans Chebet will be the winner, the male winner of the Boston Marathon for the third time. And I'm pretty confident in that. I don't know why. I have a feeling. And usually my feelings are right. So you can roast me if it's not true. And that's it. Until then, Have a great week of running. Thanks for tuning in. For more information and marathon running news, please head to www.marathonrunningpodcast.com, and we'll be back next week.
Are you looking for the perfect apparel that mirrors your love for running? Look no further than Run Swag, the go-to store by runners for runners. From witty tees to hoodies that commemorate your marathon majors to crops that get you motivated, Run Swag's got you covered. Discover the perfect blend of comfort and style. Visit www.runswag.com. Run Swag, there's something for every runner.